Dean is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across Northwest today. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in England, teacher training programs that could fill empty classrooms are being cancelled while graduates who want to teach are turned away from courses. Dean wanted to become an English teacher in Blackley and Middleton South, where schools need him most. What he discovered is that the barrier was never the absence of people or classrooms, but the political choice to keep them apart.
My name's Dean and I'm 28. I grew up in Middleton, been living in the same terraced house since I was 12 when my nan took me in after my parents split. She raised me properly, made sure I got to university. I studied English literature at Manchester Met, worked retail for 3 years after graduating, but it never felt right. The moment I knew what I wanted to do was when I started volunteering at a local literacy program. Watching someone read their first full sentence, seeing that click of understanding, that's when I knew teaching was my calling. Now I'm caring for my nan as her memory fades, and I wanted to build a career that would let me stay close to home and give back to the community that raised me. What blocked me in September 2023? I applied to Manchester Metropolitan University's PG SOE programme. I'd seen the £20,000 English teaching bursary advertised online and felt like everything was falling into place. When I went for my interview, the admissions team told me the bursary has been adjusted to reflect current priorities. It's now £10,000. That stung, but I still wanted to teach. I accepted a place anyway and took out additional student loans to cover my living costs. Then in January 2024, I got a letter from the Department for Education that changed everything. It said, due to Treasury spending constraints, bursaries for English teaching have been suspended for the remainder of this academic year. Just like that, no consultation, no warning. I was halfway through the application process, and suddenly the financial support that had made it possible was gone. I didn't give up. I switched to the School Direct programme at Middleton Technology College, thinking a more practical route might work better. The deputy head, Mrs. Patterson, was lovely about it. She sat me down in her office and said, "We'd love to take you on, Dean, but there's no funding for trainee teachers this year. The budget's been cut." She seemed genuinely sorry, but what could she do? Next, I tried Teach First. I'd heard they were different, more focused on getting graduates into challenging schools. The response was the same. Our Manchester cohort is oversubscribed due to reduced government funding. Every door I knocked on, the same phrase came back: "There's no funding." At first, I accepted it. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was saying the same thing. The government didn't have the money. Times were tight, I understood that, or thought I did, but then I started noticing things that didn't add up. One evening in February, I was walking past Middleton Technology College after visiting my nan. The staff car park was half empty. You could see straight across it. There was a sign by the entrance that said, "Teacher training spaces available," that no one had bothered to take down. I looked through the windows and saw an entire IT suite sitting unused. 20 computers, all the desks and chairs, everything you'd need to train teachers, just gathering dust. That same week, I was talking to my neighbour Sarah over the garden fence. She's a qualified teacher, got her PGCE 3 years ago, brilliant with kids. She'd been unemployed for 8 months because schools kept telling her the same thing. "We cannot afford to run that programme." Meanwhile, her son's class had 32 kids in it, and his teacher was off with stress. That's when it clicked for me. The people existed. I was one of them. Sarah was another. The buildings existed. I could see them. The classrooms that needed teachers existed. Sarah's son was sitting in one every day. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? I started thinking about it differently. The government that prints the pound notes told me it couldn't find enough pounds to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But those notes come from the Bank of England, which is owned by the government. They don't have to find money under the sofa cushions. They create it. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed. They did. Whether the skills could be taught. They could. Whether the buildings and materials were available. They were. All of them sitting there, waiting. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. I'm still here, still watching, still asking questions. I work part-time at a local bookshop now, and I'm still volunteering with the literacy program. My nan's getting worse, but she has moments where she remembers everything clearly, and in those moments she tells me not to give up on teaching. The kids need you, she says. She's right. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What I understand now is that this isn't just my story. It's happening in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Dean experienced has a name: cherry picking. Cherry picking means selecting only the evidence that supports your argument while ignoring everything else. It's like judging all dogs by focusing only on the ones that bite while ignoring the millions that don't. Tobacco companies used this technique for decades, highlighting rare studies that questioned the link between smoking and cancer while burying the overwhelming evidence that smoking kills. In Dean's story, cherry picking worked like this. Every time he asked about teacher training funding, officials pointed to examples where education spending had supposedly failed to justify never spending again. They ignored the overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest in teacher training. Better outcomes, smaller class sizes, reduced teacher stress. They selected the rare cases where programs didn't work perfectly to argue that no programs should be funded at all. The false belief that enables this technique is treating the government budget like a household budget. When officials told Dean, there's no funding, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. A household must find money before it spends. The UK government creates money when it spends. The real constraint was never financial. It was the political choice to prioritise some spending over others. Countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. Greece, the standard example critics cite, used the euro. It did not issue its own currency. Nordic countries with large public sectors have lower debt crises, not higher. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Blackley and Middleton South ranked 16 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile. 1. The constituency has 2,121 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £36.8 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Navy. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.